I don't want to share someone else's thoughts. I want to create my own original thoughts. I want to create my own original solutions. I want to look at situations and come up with my own phrasing, my own words, and do it my way.
This is the John Taffer Podcast.
Shut it down!
Hello, hello, everybody. I'm John Taffer, and this is my now monthly podcast, the John Taffer Podcast. Thank you all for listening. How's everybody doing out there? I'm back in a groove there, Corey.
Yeah, you are.
Just finished a third episode of the new Bar Rescue season. I'm happy to say that Bar Rescue is in full swing. We're back in production. And that's one of the reasons why we moved the podcast from weekly to monthly during production season. So just finished my third Bar Rescue here of the season. I'm not allowed to say where yet, but we will tell you soon where we'll be shooting. And I got to tell you, Corey, it's a whole different world on set. So there's three COVID officers on the set of Bar Rescue.
Oh, wow.
And so that you all understand, we travel with a crew of about 57. So there's a cameraman. A cameraman has a sound man that stays with him and an assistant cameraman that stays with him. It's a team of about three. We have four cameras that we deal with. We have, of course, audio. And then we have all of our production people, our producers, our PAs, all of our lighting people, our technical people. And then separate of all the sound and lighting and camera teams and producer teams, I also travel with a complete team of carpenters and remodeling people. And we have a whole tent that we set up with our electric saws and have a whole truck of equipment that we bring with us. So when you put it all together, it's about 57 people. And Viacom has done an unbelievable job of keeping everybody safe. So not only is there hand sanitizing equipment everywhere and masks everywhere, but I'm not allowed into a room until it's sprayed and sanitized. So, Corey, if I go into a room for a minute to do something and leave that room,
right,
I can't come back. It has to be sprayed down completely and fogged before I can come back in. Oh. No a crew person is allowed to get within 6 or 8 feet with me. Often it's 15 feet. They have to keep a distance from me.
Did they write like a, is this like in a 100-page manual or something, all these rules?
It's about 80 pages
of
protocols and policies, and it's all designed to keep people safe. And these three COVID officers that are on set have authority. You know, they can look at you and say, Corey, you can't do that. You know, stand back, Corey. You can't go in this room at this time. And their singular job is to keep everybody safe, and it's working. I must tell you, I feel very safe on set. Now, I've been vaccinated. I've had my second vaccination now well over a month ago. So I'm fully vaccinated and have my efficacy is all the way up. So I'm feeling pretty confident. But I got to tell you, Corey, even if I wasn't vaccinated,
They've
done a great job keeping everybody safe because most of my crew is younger and they're not vaccinated. But I can tell you, everybody feels safe. And, you know, I went out to a restaurant the other day, my first time in a long time. I felt completely safe. Even without a vaccine, Corey, I would have felt safe.
Oh, that's good.
This weekend, I went out to the Strip. Were you on a Strip at all this weekend?
I was not. I try to stay away.
Well, I got to tell you, the Strip was busy.
Really?
And a month ago, it was not. So I'm starting to see restaurants fill up and such. And my dear friends at Shift 4 told me that restaurant sales in New York last week went up about 61%
wow.
in a freaking week. So things are starting to happen. And on this podcast, we talked about Boomtown. And we talked about this. And on my very podcast, Corey, maybe it'd be fun if we pull some clips of these things. I said on this very podcast that by April 1, we will have things moving in the right direction. That April 1, to me, was an important date. Now, I read that some COVID numbers are up a little bit. They went a little crazy in Florida this week and such. But there is no question, Corey, we're starting to come out of this now with 100 million people vaccinated.
Yeah,
that's almost a third of America, for Christ's sake. So we're coming a long way, and I think we're going to see things really start to open up. And I think it's a pretty exciting time. Here's what I think. I think that we're going to have Boomtown, and I think it's going to be like the Roaring Twenties, and I think it starts this summer. And I think Vegas is going to come alive. I think Florida is going to come alive. I think all these destinations. I'll tell you what's not going to come alive so quickly is international travel, Corey. But domestic travel, I think people are going to take driving trips. I think they're going to come to Vegas. I think they're going to go to Miami and Myrtle Beach and Pigeon Forge and San Francisco and New Orleans and all these great markets, I think, are going to start to have all their old tourism numbers back by this summer. And I'm pretty darn excited about it myself. I think it's an exciting time for us all. And, you know, I was on a call with the nightclub and bar show this morning. And we're talking about working with the nightclub and bar show and blowing out the show this year and turning it into something very, very special for the industry because we need it. But I got to tell you, talking with the nightclub and bar team, they're really excited. You know, talking with a lot of people, they're really, really excited. So now I'm really starting to feel it. Are you feeling it, Corey?
I am. I feel the energy.
You do. Things are starting to loosen up and open up again. Now, tell everybody what you went through the past 10 days, because Corey got COVID 2 weeks ago.
I did.
Where do you think you got it? Do you know?
Honestly, I have no idea. I mean, my girlfriend is a nurse. She's vaccinated. So yep. I don't know if it was like on her clothes. I mean, I have no idea where I could have got it.
And you've been pretty darn safe throughout this
whole thing. I haven't got it through this whole pandemic. And as you know, we're winding down. It feels like I get it.
Yep. Isn't that funny? So you got pretty sick. Now, everybody listening, Corey's in his mid-20s. And you got pretty sick, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Did. I got all the symptoms. Lost the taste and the smell. I'll tell you, John, it was the weirdest thing in the world.
So you tasted nothing when you put it in your mouth?
Absolutely nothing.
Wow. Was that the first thing you experienced?
First it was like headaches, really bad migraines, and then it kind of just evolved.
And then once you didn't taste anything, is that when you knew it was COVID?
Yeah, I was like instantly like, yeah.
Wow. Can you taste things now?
Yeah, it came back pretty quick. I have friends though that, I mean, they say that they still can't taste and smell.
Yeah, I have some friends that said the same thing. After a couple of months, they still can't taste anything.
Yeah, so luckily it came back.
I guess it's good for a diet though, if you can't taste anything, right?
That's true. I lost about 10 pounds too in that week.
And you couldn't afford it. I can't even see you go by now, Corey. You're so thin. You know, so we're starting to see things come back. And, you know, I think of when Kristen Chenoweth was on a show and we talked about Broadway and, you know, that Broadway wasn't going to be opening till next year. And now there's discussions of moving to Broadway, opening up a little bit. And there's a lot of exciting things going on. So, you know, folks, I think we sort of made it. I think if we just hang in there for another month or two, be a little respectful of each other. Keep wearing the mask so people don't get offended when you don't. When I'm out, I have a vaccine. There's no scientific reason for me to wear a mask. But I am wearing it because I don't want to offend those around me. And I don't want to seem irresponsible to those around me. And it's a good gesture. So wear a mask until things calm down a little bit so everybody around you feels safely. But you know, Corey, I'm feeling up for this year. We've had so many bummer podcasts about, you know, how we're going to deal with the closings and the regulations and, you know, people calling in and telling us about, you know, all the bummers that they went through because of COVID, from family to school to nursing homes to daycare facilities to wedding facilities, catering facilities, bar, restaurant owners. We've had even ice skating rinks. We've had all types of owners on this show this year talking about the bummer of COVID. Well, you know what, guys? I'm done with that bullshit. I think this show should not be about COVID. I think we need to start looking forward now, Corey. What do you think?
Absolutely, John.
Now, what are you going to say, no to me?
Of course not.
Can you actually say, no, John, I disagree. I think that we should.
Let's keep this show a bummer.
So I sort of got you by the short ones, if you know what I'm saying. You sort of got to agree with me, but I think
absolutely.
You do. So for this week's podcast, I said, you know what? Let's have some fun. We haven't had fun in a real long time. So, you know, to me, being here in Vegas, when I think of fun, and I think of craziness, and I think of wildness, a couple of people come to mind, one being Carrot Top. Since his debut on Star Search with Ed McMahon 25 years ago, Corey, that's how old you are.
Yeah.
Carrot Top has soared to success and become one of the most recognizable entertainers in the world. Now, he's been at Luxor for 15 years, which is one hell of a run. Just signed for 4 years more at Luxor, and he has an unbelievable history. You know, when we look at where Carrot Top has been, Live with Regis and Kelly, Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher, The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson, Late Night with Conan. He was even on CSI Crime Scene Investigation, on Gene Simmons' Family Jewels, on Chelsea Lately, Last Comic Standing, Chris Angel, Mind Freak, Tom Green Live, The Neighbors, Jim Gallifin Show, Tosh O, Glee, Family Guy, Ellen DeGeneres Show, and even Oprah Winfrey's Where Are They Now? So Scott Thompson Carrot Top has been around for a long time. He started a little over 30 years ago with a trunk of props and a strobe light. Built his show to one of the most successful shows in Las Vegas. And everybody knows Carrot Top. Think about it. He has a logo, a visual brand, an identity. He's been doing it all these years. So I was really curious to understand not only about Scott Carrot Top and how he got to be what he is. But what's fascinating is what's happened during this year to entertainers. You know, what has this year been like for him? Where is his career going? Where has his career been that's led him to this point? It's a fascinating story how a young man named Scott Thompson, who grew up as the son of a NASA engineer in Cocoa Beach, Florida, who was an engineer on Apollo and Gemini space flights, the son of an engineer could become so wild and become such an incredible comic. Well, it's a great story. So I'm really honored to have Scott here with me today. When I come back, I will be with my buddy Carrot Top.
Don't shut down this podcast. John Taffer will be right back.
So, Corey, we're talking about how the restaurant industry comes back and how do we get people together again safely so that we can pack people into bars and restaurants like we used to. Boy, do I miss that. Well, there's a company I've seen a lot of lately called Big Ass Fans. Now, I use Big Ass Fans in Taffer's Tavern. I even use them in my home. Not only do they have a great name, they started doing something really cool with clean air disinfection. And it's right, built right into the fan, and it's perfect for any space. It's ideal for hospitality. It is technology that's endorsed by the CDC, and it's been tested against SARS, COVID, flu, A and B, rhinovirus, you name it, and they've tested for it. And it's helping keep places open and gives customers peace of mind to come back without sacrificing energy efficiency or their health. And it keeps operating costs reasonable, too, so you don't have to break the bank to provide a safe environment for your customers. So I'm all about big-ass fans and their cooling evaporative fans as well as their disinfecting fans. It's an incredible product. If you're in a business or you just want a great fan for home, check out their website, bigassfans.com. That's bigassfans.com. You know, you all know him as Carrot Top. We all know him as Carrot Top.
Unfortunately, we all, including myself.
Yes, unfortunately. Yes. You know what's interesting, though? Yeah. And I say this to my wife all the time. You don't become a household name for no reason. And you're a household name. And when I think about the fact that you became called Carrot Top when you were how old?
Well, I think it's a moniker that I just kind of took on. It was, Carrot Top was always, a lot of people that have red hair probably would call Carrot Top. I was in my dorm room at the time. And thinking about, of course, becoming a comedian. So I drew this logo, and I had this logo all drawn. My friends said, wow, what's that? What's the Carrot Top thing? And that's my logo. And they said, for what? I said, for my comedy career. And they said, you don't have an act. And I said, I know, but I have a logo. Seriously, that's not a joke.
That's the first step.
The hardest part's over. I got the logo. So now I can relax and just come up with an act, which I still don't have. But I have a logo, but so that was true. I thought of the whole thing in a sense, really did think it out.
Yeah.
I was a marketing major, and so when I decided to try to get into comedy, I really did think of like the Rolling Stones or the Grateful Dead and something that had this iconic moniker kind of,
Aerosmith
like a
is
brand,
another one.
A brand, exactly. Yep. So if you see the tongue, you know that's the Rolling Stones. You see Steely Face, you see that's Grateful Dead.
Yeah.
So I thought Carrot Top, that would be good, and so I did kind of think of the whole thing in a sense, in a marketing aspect of coming up with the, not only the act, but the show. I thought it was kind of clever and again, well thought out, I thought, but like when especially playing the clubs back in the day in Los Angeles or wherever, you'd have 100 comics a night, right? And so depending on what time you got up, the whole time that I was up there, my trunk said Carrot Top too. So my logo was literally in their face. So
you were branding yourself.
Right, branding. So they'd say, who'd you see tonight? So I saw, Carrot Top. So because I remember seeing the, not only that, the props too, the visual aspect of the show and the logo. So
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You grew up to an engineering family.
I did, yeah.
In Cocoa Beach, was it, in Florida?
Yes, Cocoa Beach, Cape Canaveral, yeah.
Yeah, which is the Cape Canaveral area. And your dad was an engineer on Apollo and Gemini, correct?
Yeah, all the Skylab, Gemini, Apollo, even all the way up to Shuttle. Wow. My joke I used to say is, if you listen, Houston, we have a problem in the back of the hill. Larry! Right after they said, Houston, we have a problem. Larry! Because my dad probably caused that.
So it's interesting that coming from a conservative engineering background that you became so funny. Were you always this way?
No, in fact, my father, believe it or not, when he asked me one day, he said, how are you paying for your bills? I said, well, I'm doing these odd jobs in college. I was delivering bread and shucking oysters and whatnot and going to school. And I said, I'm also doing comedy. So the comedy kind of pays for like my gas and this and that, my extra bills. And he says, comedy, what are you doing for comedy? And I said, No, I'm doing comedy. And my dad says, I'm not quite understanding what that means. I said, stand-up comedy. I go and I do stand-up comedy in these clubs, and I get paid like $20, $30. And he says, but you're not funny. And I said, I know. It's true, Dad. But you got to come see. So my dad never knew until literally maybe a year or two in when I started getting together enough, you know, for a 15, 20-minute act. He came and was blown away because he said, what part of this that I've never knew this, you had this side of you. He didn't know that I was an entertainer. He always knew that I was kind of class clown in a sense, but he didn't know that I was that I had this part of me, this personality. So
when you were young, you chose to go to college and take marketing major.
Mm-hmm.
So did you finish college?
I did.
And you finished with a marketing degree.
Why do you look shocked, John? I did.
No, it's not so. But it's interesting to me because you follow such traditional branding logics in your logo. You've created an identity, you know, a caricature of you. And I see them on billboards around the city.
Sure.
You know exactly who you are. So you've created the visual aspects, the personality of your show with your props and your trunks.
Right.
You really have created a very powerful brand. But, you know, it's interesting to me when I sit here and I talk to you. You are the brand. It's authentic. There's no difference between you on and off stage, really, is there?
Yeah, that's true. No, not really, no. I mean, a little bit. I was just on an airplane last night flying here, and the guy next to me said, you know, I don't want to bother you, but you're Carrot Top. He said, yeah. He says, you're so quiet. So that's one thing I think people always think I'm manic, and if I'm in a restaurant, I'm juggling salt and pepper shakers and stuff. I'm not. I'm actually, there is a mellow side. But I think every comic is that way in a sense. So that's the only aspect I think of me on stage, off stage, is you have to put up a little bit more showbiz, you know, time to go.
Yep.
You know, I met Billy Crystal, one of my favorites, but Robin Williams. Mm-hmm. I was at a big function, and he sat at this table right across from me, and I stared at him for like, the whole evening, I was just, oh my God, there's Robin Williams. I just stared at him, and he was so quiet. His head was down, and then all of a sudden they introduced him, and he went up, and he was like this crazy machine.
Like flicking the switch on.
Yeah, flipping the switch, and he came back, sat down again, right back to the mellow. I said hi to him, and I thought, you know, maybe he didn't like me. My friend's like, no, it's just, that's how he's that's his personality when he's not being Robin Williams on stage.
Yeah, I know musicians the same way. They're very mellow. Then they go out on stage and they're freaking maniacs.
Yeah.
Indeed. And then they turn it off
Unless
again.
Unless you're Steven Tyler. He's on and he is. Now that guy is the exact on and off. He's crazy. I love him. I met him for us many times, but one of my favorite was going from Las Vegas to Los Angeles, or one of the, either LA to Vegas or Vegas to LA. He was walking to the airport, and it was like he was filming a video, right? He had the scarves and the thing, and guy walking with a leaf blower in front of him, like he was just literally like this. Steven, it's hard not to say it's Steven Tyler. And I said, Steven, and he said, hey man, what's going on? And I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm just flying to see my kid. And I said, oh, you're not shooting a video? He goes, no, why? I'm like, you're like, it was amazing. I just thought that guy is him on and off, you know?
That's totally.
Wears his tights and his thing, and yeah.
Yeah. So when you were young and you were touring in all the shows, I read that you started with two trunks and a strobe light.
Literally, yeah. Actually, one trunk and a strobe light, yeah.
Did you say I'm going to develop a prop show or did it just evolve?
Well, it definitely, there was both. There was a process of coming up with a whole bunch of props and it evolved. And a lot of my comics that I grew up with, they would remember the story, but, you know, when you open, feature, and headline is basically what happens in comedy clubs. And so to be an opener, you have, you know, you're new, you have a few minutes. And then you middle, you have a little stronger, you have 15, 20. And then you headline, you should have 45 to an hour. So in my brain, I wanted to be a headliner. So I just wrote more props, which is more jokes. And so that's how I finally just, you know, I kept developing more and more so I could do more time. And so I finally called the club owner and I said, you know, I've got, you know, 20 more props. I mean, I think I can middle. And that's really honestly what happened. I built more stuff and I could do more time. So just like a monologue would do an act. I mean, so props are in a sense, you know, jokes and time.
Mm-hmm.
And so the show's evolved now more because I've done it so long. Now there's a lot, I think there's probably, I don't know the percentage of props per stand-up, but probably a third of it now or more than a third is just actual straight stand-up. It's not really the prop stuff. Still love doing the props, but I love telling a story, which I wasn't comfortable doing when I first started, because the prop guy, I was afraid to have any dead right. silence.
The prop almost was your cover in a sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And if it was one dead air, I mean, if it wasn't a laugh right after the next prop, I was like, oh, I was terrified. And now I'm in a situation where I can tell almost like a 3-minute story without a peep. And I love that because they're listening and they can't wait. And but you better hope.
And they're engaged.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you have to hope at the end of that 3-minute that there isn't the laugh, and then you're screwed. Yeah.
You know, one of my dearest friends when I was younger was Buddy Hackett.
Oh, I love Buddy Hackett.
And a lot of people who might be listening to this podcast might not know Buddy, because Buddy's been gone now, I think it's about 12 years. But working with Buddy, he had me go on a comedy store once and do 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And when I drew up, I was a drummer. And you can hide behind, and I know you're a drummer.
Right,
you can hide behind your drum set. But when I got up there with the microphone and me drum set, I freaked.
Yeah. No, it is it's a different thing for sure.
I guess you sort of untether yourself when you're more confident and from the props and everything else, and you can go in different directions as you build your skills, I would think.
Absolutely. And I did a show for Comedy Central it wasn't that long ago, but probably, you know, time is, where it was storytelling. I think it was called This Just Didn't Happen or something. And so every comic went up and they just told a story. And this is prior to, if I get done it now, I mean, I went, first thing I said was, hey, this is the first time I've ever done a TV show where I'm not holding props, so this might not go good. And so I told a story, and it was great. And people actually that saw it said, I loved it because you didn't hold a prop up the whole time. Yeah. You just told the story. So it was nice.
I have a number of employees who were very excited you were coming here today.
And Buddy Hackett, real quickly, Buddy Hackett gave me some advice in an airport lounge.
Yeah.
I walked in and Lee said, wow, it's like must be comedian's day. And I said, oh my God, who's here? What comedian is in this lounge? And she said, Buddy Hackett. And I said, you got to be kidding me. And I walked up to him and I said, Mr. Hackett, I don't want to bother you, but I'm a comedian. What? I'm a comedian. And I just wanted to just say hi. And my God, you're one of my heroes. And he said, comedian, huh? Yeah. And I said, yeah. What's your Carrot Top? And his assistant was, yeah. And he says, I'm going to give you some advice. And I have it framed in my house in Orlando. It was on a napkin from U.S. Air, and it said, the key to the treasure is the treasure. And everyone I showed that to said, I don't understand. Was he drunk? I said, no, actually, you can interpret it any way you want. I guess what he was saying to me was, you know, the key to life is life. The key to this moment right now is this moment. You know, the key to the treasure is
the treasure.
Yeah. And I thought that was a great piece of advice, because you had to kind of dissect it yourself and kind of figure out what it meant.
I knew him very well personally. He really had a huge impact on me. I can do his set, all 50 minutes
of it. Oh, that's great.
I can actually do his set.
Yeah, he was unique too. I mean, you talk about he could walk out, right, without saying anything and get a laugh.
Oh, he could.
Jonathan Winters. I mean, there's guys that just walk out, don't say a word, look at the camera, and people are going to be laughing at him. He's funny.
And he was so cute and likable. He could get a little vulgar
and get away
with it to a degree that many other comics couldn't.
Absolutely.
When you were young and going from club to club, you were really developing your craft and such, and now you're one of the most successful headliners here in Vegas. You've been here 15 years.
I've been here longer than 15. Actually, I've been at the Luxor 15. I've been at the MGM in probably 20-something. At the MGM something. So probably close to 26 years, maybe?
Here in Vegas, wow.
Yeah, so really the Luxor is only the 15th I was at the MGM prior to that, before David Copperfield made me disappear.
So obviously, I know there's some...
He called me after that, by the way.
He did?
The newspaper called, and I said, why'd you go to the Luxor? I said, because Copperfield made me disappear. And he called me, he says, I didn't make you disappear. I said, it's a joke, David.
Calm down.
I mean, in a sense you did, because you're David Copperfield, and I'm Carrot Top, so you wanted the room, and you got the room. So,
in essence, you did. So... What's the difference between touring and doing like a show in LA versus Vegas, being a Vegas headliner? Is there a difference in the way you present yourself, or is it all the same?
No, there's a whole big difference to it. I mean, I used to do, and of course, LA is different than you mean the road, like Kansas City or Oklahoma or Detroit. But the show itself, the audiences are different. The show itself is different. Like, I do my Vegas, I would say it's a Vegas show, but I do enough stuff where I talk about, you know, the hotels. I do jokes like, hey, your room's not ready. Are you cleaning it? No, we're building it. I mean, things like that would still work if I said, hey, I'm in Vegas, and I'd still do the joke. But I think when you go to Detroit, you go to here, well, you kind of, in a sense, craft the show to be a little bit more personal to that audience, that town. Like, I do a lot of local stuff. I talk about their highway, their construction, their buildings. My assistant will go around town and take pictures and incorporate him in the show. Like, hey, look, he's in front of the fire department.
That's
front of
neat.
Yeah. you know, the best sub in Detroit, and I'm eating it. You know, so they love that. They you took the time
to
personalize the show for them. So, and the mindset is different. I mean, Vegas crowds are from all over the world. Sometimes they don't speak English. Sometimes they, you know, they end up at my show and they don't know what they're in for. I mean, you know, where if I did a show in Kansas City, most people that are going to get a babysitter and get tickets are going to know what they're in for. We're going to see Carrot Top. Yeah. People in Vegas might say, oh, we can't get into Blooming Group, so we'll go see the Orange Dude.
You know, I think when somebody goes to a club to see Carrot Top in Detroit, they're going to see Carrot Top. When they're in Vegas, they're seeing Carrot Top while they're in Vegas.
Right, and very true. Exactly my point. I mean, some fly here specifically. I mean, I get people in my, we're flying out to see you, but you're right. I think the honest answers are really just coming to Vegas and then I'm a sideshow. Yeah. Sometimes even the buffet will beat out me. They really want
to. I used to run Jewish hotels years ago, and being Jewish myself, and we always used to kid around about, they'd line up an hour and a half before the opened, right?
Yeah, like they're going to a Stones concert.
That's right.
What are you here for? The roast beef.
That's right. Yeah.
Cornish beef or whatever. So corn beef.
You are, you know, I got a chance to be with you the other day, and you're funny all the time. And how do you write? Is writing a serious thing for you? Does it happen during the course of life? Do you pull out a pad and write shit down?
That's exactly. I still do. I don't have a computer. I was on the plane last night writing the whole time. In fact, I wish I remember the one I just wrote. God, I just wrote it too, and I even wrote a prop. But I'm not one of those comics that I have friends that are very. What do you call that? Disciplined.
Yeah, methodical almost.
It's disciplined and methodical, and they sit down and they say, I'm going to write 4 hours. Like Tom Green, he's a friend of mine. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write all day. And I'm completely the opposite. I'm going to say, I'm going to go day drink and hopefully something hits me and have a, you know, see something on TV that might inspire me to think of a joke or a current event or something observational. But I'm definitely not one that's going to say, I'm going to write jokes today. No.
Yeah, it's interesting that you said observational, because my next question was, how would you define your comedy in one word if you had to?
Well, one of my favorite comics was George Carlin, and I always, always say his was very observational. I love when you leave a show and you go, or at a show when the comic says something and you see people go, oh my God, that just happened to me. So I try to do things that people can relate to in that regard too. Whether it's COVID jokes with the mask, I mean, you know, I'll say, anyone else do this when someone says something, you pull your mask down. What's it? I'm sorry, what? and everyone goes, oh my God, I do that too. So observational, I think would be a good word. It's one.
Yeah.
What I wish people would say is clever and smart and witty, but yeah.
But that's true. You are clever, smart.
We have to be, I think, to be a comic to a degree to be.
So I used to run the Troubadour in Hollywood, California, in the late 70s and early 80s, when George Carlin used to hang out in the Troubadour every night.
Yeah, watch like Zeppelin.
He was literally there every night back in those years. And he was something else. He was a very complicated man, actually.
Yep.
Had a lot of sorrow in his life.
Yep, very much so.
Recreational difficulties in his life there for a while.
Yep, there are a lot of comics. Lucky I missed that whole era, I think. Or maybe unluckily I missed it.
Yeah.
It would have been fun to do a lot of drugs, huh? That sucks.
It had its benefits in the day, for sure.
Oh, but George had a, you know, he and I became good friends, and he was a big, again, one of those things you just pinch yourself like, oh my God, George Carlin just said I'm funny and love my, it was a joke I did with these paper cups and string, made it into a phone and a second call for call waiting, and he said, that is brilliant, did you come up with that? Anyway, so we became... I would say close friend, but he invited me backstage. And one night, I love telling the story, I was in Vegas, and he was playing at the Hollywood Theater where I was playing. I came in a night early and watched the end of his show from the side. And his manager, Jerry, who's I think still was about forever, Jerry Hansa, said, yeah, Scott, hang right here. Well, George will love to see you. And I came off, and he came up to me. He says, hey, kid, how much did you see? I said, pretty much the whole thing. He said, it sucked. I said, no, stop. Every comic's the same. Did you see the first 10? It was good. You saw the last 10. Wasn't so good. I tanked. I said, it's impossible for you to tank. He said, no, I tanked. So anyway, he says, how many shows do you do? And I said, because I was taking over the same room. And I said, I do one a night, but on Saturday we do two. And he stopped, like as he's walking and talking, he stopped and says, why the hell do you do two shows? And I just, as a joke, just said, well, I know why I said, but the real answer is because my manager has a car payment. but my instant joke to him was I said, you know, if I get two shots at it, if I screw up the first one, I get a second shot. And he gave me the biggest rip. I mean, just grabbed me by the shirt and said, never, ever, ever say that again. Never give the audience the upper hand. You do what you do and you do your thing. And if they don't get it, F them. Never say never give them the upper hand. And I've never forgotten that. It was just so weird. And then he said, all right, now you can come and have a talk with me. And but he set that record straight real quick.
You know, it's interesting. When I went into television 10 years ago, and my show now is one of the most successful reality shows in history, and everybody tried to change me, thanks. Everybody tried to change me. You know, and say, oh, no, you got to be this, you got to be that. You know, you got to be Gordon Ramsay. You got to be. And, you know, I found that I was resistant to change and just tried to totally be myself and authentic, as you are. And I think that's really the ticket. And when you look at people that have had the staying power, authenticity seems to get them there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you're absolutely right about that. I mean, anytime I've been offered a show, very rarely, been offered a show, that they always try to do the exact same thing. They want to change what it is that I do into something, you know, have a fake girlfriend or a fake crew. And I said, no, if we're doing this, we're having my crew and my family and my actual mom and my, you know what I mean? My actual dog. I don't want to, you know, and so they want to change it into make it where it's not real. And I think you're right.
Yeah.
It's got to be authentic for sure.
And you're not a scripted guy. You go out there, you have your box of goodies, you have all your options.
It's kind of an organized outline in a sense. I mean, I can dip in and out of it, in and out of it. My sound guys and my crew, we've done it so long together, they kind of know where I'm going and they can kind of dance with me.
Right.
So I give them kind of a beat if they know I'm going to go here or go there. But I do have an organized mess. Everything in the, I do know where everything is, unless they put it in the wrong spot. And then I usually tell them out loud, thanks for effing that up. And I'll just, because that's the authenticity of the show, too.
You know what's interesting?
We break that barrier. I don't like it to be so, you know, if joke doesn't go well, which my favorite thing that Johnny Carson was famously known for, was how he would bomb and make it funny.
Hysterical.
Absolutely, right?
When when he'd grab the boom and pull it down
Is
this working?
Yeah. I mean, I love that. And I do that in the show all the time. If something doesn't eat it, I mean, I literally go, well, we'll take that out. Yeah. And I think they appreciate that because they don't want to have that uncomfortable feeling in that, like, oh, it's not going well.
Yeah, it's honesty. Yeah. Okay, so I got to ask you about doing CSI.
Oh,
how much fun was it to do theatrical roles
like that?
Well, it was
great because it's a show that I actually, you know, I watch and it was like you know, wow, this is cool, and I'm on CSI, like it's, you know, cool.
I haven't seen it, so did you play a criminal?
No, I played, see, again, I'm stereotyped, I played me, it's a stretch.
Okay.
Played me, and I was involved in this somehow twist of a murder, where a girl got murdered, and I was, apparently they found, she was at backstage at my show, and they found blood on the backstage pass, and it turns out that I, of course, wasn't, but they had me. I think that the best was the intro to the show, and they said, Carrot Top, dog tied in the back, something like Carrot Top tied up in the back of a convertible. And that was the lead into the commercial. And everyone was calling me going, Carrot Top tied up in the back of a car, hog tied in the back of a car, naked. I was naked, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that everybody could learn about the carpet versus the drapes then, in that case.
Yeah. Oh, God.
What about Trailer Park Boys? Now, I loved Trailer Park Boys when the series was on years ago. And I thought the last movie that they made was not the one that you were in, the one before it.
Yeah.
Was sort of a disappointment.
I didn't see the movie. Maybe because I wasn't in it, I didn't watch it.
Yeah, it was called Liquored Up or something.
Oh, I didn't see it. No.
Yeah, it was sort of a disappointment. Good, yeah. So does Bubbles wear glasses in real life?
No, Bubbles is, again, you know, he's somebody that is completely different on stage, off stage. Yeah, no, once he puts those things on, he turns into it. It's unreal. He'll be just sitting there talking to you. I mean, he's crazy, though. Yeah. And then he'll put the glasses on, and you come to Bubbles, and you lose your mind. But they're such great people. In fact, that was one of the, again, pinch me moments, because we were on tour in the middle of up northern Canada and everywhere, and we went to this grocery store. We were getting booze for the bus and whatnot, and there was a big display. It said Trailer Park Boys, and our runner says, I said, what's that? She said, you don't know what Trailer Park Boys? I said, no. I said, it's the biggest thing in the world. Anyway, I bought, like, you know, two seasons or whatever it was, took it back on the bus that night, and we started watching our crew after the shows, and we started watching it, and we were so addicted. I mean, it was, like, unbelievably addictive, right? So I knew them through their movies and the show.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, I got a call. Hey, do you want to be in
Trailer Park Boys
movie? Trailer Park Boys. No, sir. I was like, oh, my God. I can't. And I got on a plane. I never forget this. I'm landing at the airport. I said, I'm going to meet the Trailer Park Boys. And I went to the, took me to the airport or to the airport or the hotel. And sure enough, they're all in there. And I was just like, and they're so mellow and different. And, you know, they're not their characters.
Yeah.
And they're just like so nice. And they were like, wow, Carrot Top. I'm like, oh, shut up. They're like, no, we're like, wow, you're like legend. I'm like, you're a legend. Like, no, we're only legend in Canada. You're like legend. So we had a very good relationship. And then we've become really good friends. And then just to bring up the Trailer Park Boys, and when I got the script, it said Tom Arnold, right? And Tom Arnold is a really good friend of mine. So yeah. I'm reading the script and I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to do this whole thing with Tom Arnold. I land in the airport. The runners stand there. She says, well, we're so excited you're here. And she's holding a sign that says Tom Green. No, we're just waiting on Tom. And I said, that bastard's not here yet. Oh, my God, I can't wait. I'm going to hide behind this dumpster when he shows up and I'm going to do something stupid. And all of a sudden, Tom Green walks up. And I said, oh, are you in the movie too? And he goes, yeah. I said, that's cool. We had never met. And I said, wow, this is great. I said, you know Tom Arnold, right? And he goes, Tom Arnold? I know Tom Arnold. I said, well, this would be fun, all three of us on a set. Yor goes, Tom Arnold's not in this movie. I said, yeah, it says Tom Arnold. She goes, no, it replaced with Tom Green. And I said, oh, that I'm not doing it. So I said to the girl, I said, no, call them right now and tell them I'm out. And so they called the guy, and Lee's on the phone. I said, I thought it was supposed to be Tom Arnold, and he didn't tell me it's Tom Green, so I really don't want to do this. And the guy's like, seriously? I'm like, I'm just messing with you. And Tom Green's just standing there like, oh, my God, seriously? So we became really close friends, so yeah. That's a true story, though. It did say Tom Arnold on the script.
How much pressure do you have on you to stay relevant and to try new material? Is it, because I find that, you know, people have an expectation of me being on TV. Mm. And I always have to be me, that guy from TV.
Right, sure.
So, you know, to me, I got to be the boss. I got to be this. And it puts this pressure on us all the time.
Yeah.
Do you feel pressure from being Carrot Top?
More than you know, John.
No, I'm really curious.
Jeff, where's my pills? I mean, there's always a certain degree of that. I think if you overthink it, then you start, that's when you start having writer's block and start overthinking things. You just, you know, I've done this for 36 years now, so yeah. I think I got a rhythm in how I do it. And I try to not, but yes, there's definitely that aspect of always having pressure to be, I think more pressure not, one, to reinvent, keep going, new jokes, I think that's important, but also just keeping that energy and that keeping that brand alive, keeping people when they come to the show, you got to put on the best show every night because people will say, oh, I saw Carrot Top, so good. Saw him years ago, he was so funny, the show was like flat, he was walking through it. So in that regard, I'm a perfectionist. I try to do the best I can every time, like it's the first show I've ever done.
I was telling you, my employees here love you, and they were talking about
how... They didn't seem like it when I walked in.
No, one of them seen you three times and told me how each show was so different.
Oh, yeah, well, good.
Do you know that before you go out on stage, or somewhat are you reacting to the audience? Oh, this worked better than that. So you sort of steer yourself a little.
A little bit of both. A little bit of both. Sometimes there's new things that I just wrote that I know that I can't wait to do. It's going to be new for all of us, them and me. And we try to rehearse. We don't have a lot of rehearsal time, but we try to rehearse it down enough. And then I'll know this show will be different if I know I've got something planned. Then sometimes there's things that just happen with the audience, like you said, that might just be someone, an audience member that might say something or start something. You know, a couple of weeks ago I was doing a show and I did something about COVID. And she yelled out herpes, and I said, no, we're talking about COVID, not herpes, but thanks. And she's like, herpes. I'm like, okay, she's got herpes. And the whole show, I kept calling back to this woman that yelled herpes, so it made that show unique in its sense because that, not really heckler, we don't really get hecklers, but...
You sort of pivoted on it, if you will.
Yeah, right. Kept calling back to and pivoting on it, and it became funny. Then we had a show, the mic went out. So throughout the whole show, I kept, you know, digging back on, you know, like when the mic goes out and then the whole crowd would laugh, like, it's okay, dude. Cause, you know, you have to deal with those situations sometimes when you have technical problems where, you know, the whole audience is standing and there's no mic, you know.
Do you think Carrot Top would be the household name that it is today if you didn't have a marketing degree?
Well, who knows? I don't know. Yeah, maybe not. I mean,
because it seems to have influenced you greatly. Just basic thinking of brand building and marketing and positioning and visuals, and you know, I wonder.
I think about that too all the time. I always think about all that in life. I always think that, you know, you're meant to be where you like. I wanted to go to University of Florida. I wanted to be a Gator because I had orange hair. I figured if I went to the game, they'd be like, "Wow, look at this guy. He's a fan." And I just loved the Gators and the Florida thing, and it was just the school I wanted to go to in Gainesville, and I couldn't afford it, and I couldn't get in. I think I got accepted in, but I couldn't afford to go. And so I went to Florida Atlantic down in Boca Raton. Mm. And if I hadn't have done that, though, you know what I mean? I was thinking if I hadn't have done that, I might not have done this. If I had gone to Florida, maybe I would be an astronaut right now. But, so I think you might be right, though. Things happen for reasons.
Yeah.
And I reluctantly went. I didn't want to really go to that school in the beginning. But I did, and then it turned out to be a great thing.
Yeah, because you're perceived as a crazy, wild comedian. But actually, when I talk with you, you are a little strategic in the way you built your brand and the way you went at your logo. And there was strategic thinking.
This is all an act, John, by the way. This is all an act. This is, none of this is true. I'm being fed this in my ear from my assistant. When you talk, I like when you said third person. What Carrot Top? If Carrot Top, what? I love Tom Jones. So I met Tom Jones again in Vegas. You meet most people. And I always enjoyed Tom because he would talk in third person on stage. He's like, Tom is going to have some water now. Tom is going to drink some water, and then Tom is going to sing Green, Green Grass of Home, yes? And I used to say, well, who the hell are you then? Go get Tommy.
Yeah, and I want to see Tom.
Yeah, who's Tom? Who are you then? Tommy's
having fun.
It was a
Seinfeld episode.
Tommy,
remember the guy Jimmy? Jimmy doesn't like this. But he was Jimmy.
Yeah, he was Jimmy. Yeah. I love that.
When you look at now, you just signed another 4 years here, not mistaken.
We had a 5-year, but the one of the years was this whole year off, so yeah. I don't know if that counts. It would be an asterisk by it.
Yeah. How has COVID affected you? It's affected
me
a little bit.
Well, like everybody. I mean, absolutely. I mean, mentally and physically, everything is affected. I mean, it's affected everybody. One, not just, you know, the obvious, not working for a year, that affected me mentally. You know, society, all changing, that affected the whole world.
Yeah.
It didn't affect just every individual. It affected, I mean, every individual. I mean, even to the psyche of walking around with masks and not having a mask and this and distancing and shaking hands and everything. It's just, it's made everybody uptight and uncomfortable for a year. And you finally feel a little bit of, I wouldn't say, you know, not back to, but someone posted a picture of the pool in Vegas this weekend and it was completely, I mean, wall to wall.
Yeah, Strip was busy this weekend. Yeah. I'm guessing your show's starting to fill now.
Yeah, we're allowed to have more. So we were at our capacity before, which was another fun joke. Cause I'd come out and, you know, 1,400 seat theater holding, we have 100 people. I said, hey, we're sold out. And we get a huge laugh.
Yeah.
I said, best joke of the night. Look around, we're sold out.
Yeah.
So I think we're up to now 250, and so
big difference between 100 and 250.
Oh, absolutely.
We can light up an audience with 250.
Oh, no, you can. It's the first one back will be tonight with the 250. So it's going to be
that's
exciting.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
You know, it's interesting. This year taught me something. First of all, it humbled me a little bit this year, and it taught me how much we all need each other this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I think it sort of connected us, even though the separation separated us. Mm-hmm. I think in a way it made us want to be together more than ever before.
Yeah, interesting you say that. Yeah.
And I think that this summer is going to be heyday. You know, I look at there's going to be less restaurants, less bars open. People are starting to come back already. You know, people can't wait to get back out. I think pent up demand, I think they're going fucking nuts. And I think they can't wait to get out there.
Absolutely,
again.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have a hell of a summer.
I hope so, yeah. I just got back from Florida where I live and it was unreal. I mean, just the amount of people.
Do you still spend a lot of time on the road, doing road
trips?
We do.
We don't do a lot. We do as you know, we're here so many weeks of the, you know, obligated to the Luxor contract for that.
Yeah.
But we do take we do still go out and do weeks here and there. It's my week off, so I could be on my boat, but I instead go to Idaho or wherever.
Where do you keep your boat? Florida.
In Florida. Yeah, gotcha. I live on a lake, so it's
In Orlando, sure.
Yeah, it's all water. Just beautiful, beautiful spot.
Yeah. Do you like Las Vegas living here?
I do. I do love Las Vegas. I'm very lucky that I have both retreats. I go here and I go there. I was there just, you know, for a week and I came back here and it's, you know, it's beautiful. The mountains, the weather today is spectacular. And and I get to work. You know, I that part of it, I miss so much, you know, being able to perform again. You know, like you said, enjoy take that again. What we learned, I think, taking for granted not like our friendship and our people, but our job. Like when I got to go back and work again, it was just I got to work again. It was just unreal.
You know? Yeah,
that feeling of because I used to joke with my sense. You lose, you know, COVID side effects. You lose your sense of taste and smell. And I said I was starting to lose my sense of purpose. Literally,
I get it.
I didn't. I'd get up and I'd go for my run, and then I'd go sit in the park and have lunch, and then I'd go home, and then I'd go sit in the park and then go home, watch Netflix and go to bed literally for 8 months.
I was just going to ask you, how'd you get through it? And that's how you got through it.
Yeah. And I was lucky again that I had my boat and I had some friends that we all lived there. We kind of, you know, did our own little
safe, bubble thing.
Yeah. Our little bubble thing. And we all were very safe. And, without that, I don't know what I would have done though. Yeah. Florida definitely saved me.
Yeah. What haven't you done that you'd love to do? I know Tonight Show was a big deal for you when you went on the Tonight Show.
I was going
to
say the show, but now I've done it, so.
Yeah. You know, was that a life changer as much as everybody says it is?
Yes, it is. And there's nothing for a comic. and I hope that comics still to this day feel that way. But when I every comic you did the Tonight Show, you were legit.
Yeah.
You know.
But you know, back then they took chances with young comics and they broke young comics.
Yep.
And it was a different mentality of television. Sure. Today it almost seems like they're scared to put that young guy on. They only want proven commodities.
Those
opportunities for young comics don't exist like they used to. At least on the Tonight Show time of environment.
No, you're right. You're right.
Now, there's other places to go, obviously, Comedy Central and online, and there's other content opportunities. But you know, the days of a Johnny Carson or Jay Leno breaking a comic are sort of over.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I remember all the ones that I, and I'll tell you my story with that too, with the Johnny stuff. But when you did the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson as a comic, you were a household name the next day.
That's right.
Like Steve Martin. Louis Anderson, I mean, Ellen.
Robin Williams.
I was just thinking one of the they did where they literally, like Louis, you know, did it, called him over and invited him back. I think Ellen, too, the very next day for two in a row.
Wow.
They were that strong. And he loved him that much.
And their fees tripled overnight.
Oh, absolutely. They ended up opening for acts in Vegas, and he'd open for Tom Jones or whatnot. I did the Tonight Show the first month Jay took over, and I remember Jim McCauley was the talent coordinator for Johnny, and I knew Ed McMahon and Jim DeCordova and McCauley loved me. I would go to the improv even at the improv or comedy store, do my set, and Jim McCauley would come over, and he's the guy, you know, if you're on with Johnny,
right,
and he would come over and say that is so great. And I said, do I get a spot? And he says, Johnny doesn't like variety. And I was like, oh, man. But you look back, that's what is. His whole show was variety. Whole Karnak. That was props. That was variety.
Yeah.
Everything he did with the dark guy throwing the
envelope.
And throwing the hatchet thing and the dogs and the cookie. That was all variety. So I don't know if he had a stick of his thing about, maybe just, but he said he does love you. And so it always made me feel good. But right after Johnny left, I got him with Jay. And the coolest thing about that one, of course, Jay was such a sweet guy. I mean, he made me in a sense. He gave me like 35 spots or more.
Yeah.
But I remember that when he took over that set, it was the Johnny set. So when my first Tonight Show was in that studio on the Gold Star.
Wow.
With the audience. Like behind the cameras, like it's not now with a modern. Jay was the first one that modernized that. He took away the cameras.
He added that front stage to make it more like a venue,
and get rid of the cameras used to be. And then the audience was way back in the back at the Tonight Show. So you're really working to the camera. So Jay got rid of the cameras and put the audience down there. So when I finally started doing it with that, I was like, oh, this is like working a club.
Yeah.
And it was great. He was very, very smart.
Well, Johnny had his cue card rack between the audience and him and that whole setup there.
Sure he did.
But remember those days, if you were a comic on Johnny Carson, you did great. But if he called you over.
Oh, yeah, no
kidding. That was the life changer.
Oh, you were like, oh, my God, I just bought a new car.
That's right. Yeah. Maybe 10 of them.
Maybe 10, maybe a house. Yeah, very true.
Well, this has been a lot of fun having you here, Scott.
Thank you.
Las Vegas loves you. You know what people say when I mention this? Oh, we see him around town. We see him in supermarkets. Yeah. We see him everywhere. And you know, your authenticity is unbelievable, buddy. And that's why you're so successful, because you don't have to be Carrot Top. You just are.
Wait, I don't have to be?
I don't think you have to be anymore. John? I think you can just go out there and do it at this point. But I'm going to come see the show
next
week or so.
I do forget that I'm me, though. Do you ever do this, too? Because you know, people recognize. So I do this all the time. I'm so stupid. I just think I am a normal person. But I had to go meet a friend, and this was in Orlando last week, and he said, go meet me at this whatever, and I got lost. And there was a place I was meeting him. I ended up in this neighborhood, and I'm like driving, and all of a sudden I go to do a U-turn, and there's this guy in the middle of nowhere in his yard, and he's like, hey, what the? And I'm like, hey. And I go, yeah, how do I get to? He's like, are you? And I said, yeah. How do I get to the, you know, Main Street? He's like, Carrot Top is in my driveway. I'm like, yes. But you forget, like, that guy was like blown away.
At the moment,
he couldn't
believe
it. I said, yeah, no, but how does that happen? I said, yeah. Weird things, you'll meet better people. You'll meet a big star one day in your driveway.
I had a guy come up to me on Bourbon Street with a crowd around me. He said, are you John Taffer? I said, oh, I get that all the time. People tell me I look just like him. They tell me I sound like him, too. He goes, you really
you do.
And then he walked away. How about the guy who comes up to you and says, you're Who are you?
Yeah.
And then you got to tell him who you are.
Yeah, yeah. I get that too.
Those are rough
moments.
You're that.
Tell me who you are. Okay. Yep. It was in Europe that happened a lot because all the American tourists knew who I was, but the European tourists, of course, they think I'm Sean White, you know? So they're all freaking out, and you could see them. You could tell they don't speak any English, you know? And all these people are taking pictures of me, and then finally they walk out. I said, do you know who I am? You are famous. I said, but you don't know who I am. He says, no. I said, why do you want to get a picture of me? Because you're famous. You are famous. I will look you up. But yeah, they. I have no idea what accent that was.
But, how about in the airport? Somebody takes a picture of that as a crowd around, and they don't know who you are, but they got to have a picture.
They got to have the picture
because they know you're someone.
Or they do the thing like last night on the plane. They do the thing when they're getting on. And they videotape.
Oh yeah, the side.
The side shot. The side shot. But I'm sitting there reading a stupid, you know, mag, and I look up and I can see it. So finally I'm like, hi. And then she, you're okay. No, you can take it. Just let me look good in it, you know. And they're picking my nose. And, oh, I think you're on top on the plane.
This has been having you, buddy.
Yeah, thank
so
you.
Congrats on so many
can
years.
I tell you one more show about an airplane, just because this is my favorite airplane story.
Good.
So I'm late for the plane, right? And I'm running, and I get it's from Salt Lake to here. And I run, I sit down. I've got shorts. My nails are painted. My toenails are painted. I look like more of a mess than I look today. I'm like, oh my God, I made the flight. And I put my bag down, and the guy next to me ran for president. Mitt Romney, right?
Oh, Mitt Romney.
So I said, oh my God, and it's right when he's running for president. I mean, he's like top. I said, oh my God, hi. And he says, hey, yeah, where are you coming? I said, I just made my connector and da da da. And I said, God, if I had known, I was going to sit next to you, I would have put on pants. And he's like, oh, no, don't be stupid. We're having fun. I didn't think he knew who I was. He says, no, you look how you're supposed to look, you're Carrot Top. And I said, oh, wow. I said, I wouldn't realize you'd know who I was. He says, who doesn't know who you are? You're Carrot Top. And I said, you're Mitt Romney. He says, do I have your vote? And I said, we'll see how the flight goes. So we're sitting there literally taxiing, and I'm making this up. He's like so coiffed. I mean, he smells like $1 million. His hair is not one hair. He's a beautiful suit. He's reading the Wall Street Journal, right? Just beautiful man. And I'm sitting there, my shorts and my stupid, I think I got like clipping dreadlocks in my hair. And I'm reading like the USA Today, and I leaned over. I said, look, even your paper's smarter than mine. Look. Mine has colors. Mine has pictures, and yours is all. And we had the best. So we land. He says, "So we get your vote." And I said, "Yeah, you got my vote."
He's a good guy.
Real good guy.
The politics in America, and I don't want to get, but does this divisiveness stuff bother you?
Absolutely, because my whole life, and especially what I do for a living, is to poke fun at all. People, all society, all sides. That's our whole job is to poke fun at things that everyone else is either afraid to or not allowed to, and then we do it, and it's satire. And it went all the way back to, you know, all the way back. I mean, vaudeville
before the jester days,
indeed. You know, Carson picked on Jimmy Carter. You picked on Reagan.
How did you like on your, everyone? There was
you
no
like
sides
steak?
To it.
Well, how would you like your steak, Mr. President? Well, I mean, it was just jokes. Picking on Biden falling down the stairs, I don't know yet. I did it on my Instagram. I got the most likes there, but I was just, I didn't even say it was him. I just tripped down some stairs and said, yeah, I got this, and people loved it.
So I wouldn't ask you what they are, but I'm guessing there are jokes and parts of your show from 10, 15 years ago that you can't do anymore because in today's environment, they're unacceptable.
Yep.
Isn't that a shame?
There's more than you even know.
Isn't that a shame?
Yes, it's a shame.
It seems
and
like
used to kill. And I did it on network television. That's the fun. I look back and I said, oh my God, I did that on Regis and Kathy Lee.
Right.
Literally.
And now you can't do it on a stage
you
in
can't
Vegas.
Do it. And right.
You think.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a little nerve wracking
yeah.
On top of just being a little disappointing that we can't all just have fun again.
It's a little challenging
without
a comic.
Her going immediately at someone in a mean way, but in a satire, in a fun way. You know, that's kind of what we're supposed to do.
Yeah, that's
right, folks. Okay. That's my horrible Trump.
Mm. Oh, you got the lip thing down.
Yeah, the lip down. I got the
you
lip.
Got that down, right. Yeah. Now, if you
I
just
met
do really mean tweets, you'd have it down pretty good.
I was on Regis and Kathy Lee with him. I met him. And I'll leave you on this because I know you're running out of... you probably don't even have any tape in here, do you? We're just doing this for nothing.
No, we got tape.
We was on the show and we went... I came out and Donald Trump was standing there, and I said, I took Regis's hand, and I said, it's great to finally be on the show where I don't have the weirdest hair. And he got all bent out. What do you mean, where? Touch it. I said, what? Touch it. And he made me touch his hair. And I said, what? And I said, no. He said, tell everybody. And I said, tell everybody. Tell them it's real. I said, I didn't say it wasn't real. I said it was weird. So
that was this thing. He hates when people.
Then we went to, yeah, but they went to commercial break, and he couldn't have been nicer. And I mean, he knew my background. He knew I went to FAU. He knew my dad worked at NASA. He knew I got a marketing degree. I mean, he did his homework. And then yeah. I told him I used to drive by his compound when I went to Boca Raton. We'd drive up West Palm and go by his house. He's like, you should have stopped by. Yeah, okay, I should have stopped
by. Well, I interviewed him a week before the election, actually, and he, same thing. He was very gracious and did his homework. And,
yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, their public persona is a little different than their private persona.
Absolutely.
But I'm guessing it's a little challenging for a new comic today with all the limitations around
us. I bet it would
us.
Be. I don't know how, I don't know how young comics, God bless them, and I hope they are. You know, we need them. We need the new generation. Because I'm the old generation now. I'm the old.
Can you believe it?
I know. No, I used to be the young comic, and now I'm the old guy. I'm the guy. Yeah, Carrot Top's the veteran.
But you've kept your cool, though.
Yeah.
You have.
Yeah.
You're no less cool than you were 20 years ago.
I think I'm cooler.
I think you're cooler. You certainly kept your cool. Anyway, buddy, this was a blast. You're a lot of fun on social media.
Oh,
so
thanks.
Where can people follow you?
Yeah, Carrot Top Live is my Instagram, and then at Real Carrot Top is my Twitter, I think, and Real Carrot Top is also my other. But I'm looking to get TikTok because that's the one everyone's doing. And all my Instagram things are very, very TikTok-ish, a lot of music and stuff. So.
Yep. Yeah,
Carrot Top.
That's a lot of fun to watch.
Carrot Top Live, thanks.
That's a lot of fun to watch. And when you come to Vegas, of course, don't miss Carrot Top show at Luxor. And, buddy, it's a pleasure to be with you.
John.
I have so much respect for people that can last a long time, and that build a brand that's meaningful. And you know, you've done both. You've built a wonderful brand. You have a great persona. Your lasting power is incredible. And hats off, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you.
Proud to call you a friend.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you, John. Likewise. Very nice.
Thanks.
Hi to all your fans that watch this too.
Bye, bye, everybody.
Don't shut down this podcast. John Taffer will be right back.
So, you know, Corey, when I opened up Taffer's Tavern, I didn't want TVs with guys sitting behind desks all day. I wanted great video programming. So I chose Atmosphere TV. Atmosphere TV is home to 40-plus content channels, including their flagship channel, Chive TV. It's built for your business and proven to keep your customers sitting, eating, drinking, and spending more money. You can find Atmosphere in thousands of bars and restaurants nationwide, and their service remains 100% free for business use. So just text Taffer to 474747 or head over to Atmosphere TV, atmosphere.tv, and use the discount code Taffer to receive your device 100% free today. That's atmosphere.tv, atmosphere.tv. Boy, that was fun having Carrot Top, wasn't it, Corey?
It was. He's a good guy.
He's a great guy. You know, think about this. He went to college in marketing, earned a marketing degree. He was a studious guy. His dad was an engineer. So he grew up in a very disciplined world. And when his father went to see his first comedy show, he was surprised. He never even realized that his son, Scott, was so funny, which is really interesting. So Scott sort of kept his humor to himself in his family growing up. He went to college. He learned marketing. He thought about the Grateful Dead, and it had a logo. And the Rolling Stones had a logo, and Aerosmith had a logo. He went to work on building a logo. He went to work on building a brand and really went at it strategically, created Carrot Top as a brand. Then he had his own brand of comedy with the props and the trunks and everything that he does. And he built this brand into something that's expected. And now when people see the image of Carrot Top, you know exactly who it is, and you know he's a comedian. And when you hear Carrot Top, you know exactly who he is, and you know he's a comedian. He's a branding genius as well as a comedy genius. And think about this. Carrot Top has kept himself relevant all of these years, and he still has a very, very popular show right here in Las Vegas. It's fun to talk to somebody who you think is so crazy and realize they might be the sanest person in the room. Carrot Top isn't crazy. Carrot Top is smart. He's strategic. He knew how to build a brand. He knows how to be funny. He works at creating his show, making it better and better all the time. You know what? Scott Thompson is an entrepreneur. Just like the guy who owns a cigar shop in a corner or a bar or a restaurant or a boutique salon. He's a marketer. He's a brand builder. He's a product developer. He does the same things that we all do. He just does it really, really well. And it's fun to have a comedian like Scott on the show and to realize how serious the business of entertainment branding and comedy can in fact be. Well, if he can market and build a brand, so can you. If he can create imaging and create expectation, so can you. So there's a lot to learn from Carrot Top in the way he built his brand and built his life. But you know, the most important thing to him is to make people laugh. And that's what I hope this podcast said. I hope it brought a smile to your face today, because we've all been through hell and we seem to be coming out the other side of it now. This is a good time, folks. People are getting vaccines. They're starting to go out again. Restaurant numbers are coming up. The Vegas Strip is starting to get full again. People are starting to travel again. The airport had the most traffic this weekend that it's had since the pandemic started. We are on our way, guys. Let's start smiling again. Let's start partying again. Let's start getting out there again, because before you know it, I think this is all going to be over. And then we can all go to a Carrot Top show together. What do you think, Corey?
Oh, I'm down, John.
Yeah, we'll take the whole office over there to see Scott. Anyway, thanks, everybody, for being here. We'll talk to you next month. Well, Corey's doing something cool next week. Corey's going to the Bar Rescue set. We're going to be shooting all this backstage content, which we'll be posting online. So keep an eye out for much more Bar Rescue content online as we get ready to launch the new season. I'll talk to you guys next month. And don't forget to subscribe and leave a comment, because I love to read your comments. And rate my podcast. It really keeps me going and motivated to bring everyone more episodes. And I'd love to answer your questions, guys. So on my podcast page, go ahead, ask me questions. On my social media pages, we love to include them in a podcast. And don't forget, you can reach me at podcast@johntaffer.com. podcast@johntaffer.com. You can also leave a voicemail for us at 877-4-TAFFER. Is that what it was, Corey?
That's it, yep.
You can also leave a voicemail for us at 877-4-TAFFER, 877 and number 4-TAFFER. So we'd love to hear from you. Talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Subscribe to the John Taffer Podcast right now.